Hello, my name is Sam Dunnewald, and I am the host of Dice Exploder, the Emmy-nominated podcast all about RPG design right here on the Many-Sided Network. And after years of interviews and ideation with some of the best designers in RPGs, my first print game is coming to Kickstarter. Band-Aids and Bullet Holes, a John Wick-inspired game about getting your bloody revenge. Band-Aids and Bullet Holes is a game about standing in the shadow of a skyscraper in the pouring rain, bathed in bubblegum neon and someone else's blood, staring down at the man who ruined your life all those years ago, raising the barrel of a gun and asking, "Will you pull the trigger?" Band-Aids and Bullet Holes is a one-shot capsule game box set deck builder RPG, and you can follow it right now on Kickstarter. Back Band-Aids and Bullet Holes on May 5th.
Hey, Brian.
Hey, Elliot.
What's the talk of the table?
This week, we are sitting down with Lone Archivist, the graphic designer and layout artist known for their work on projects like Hull Breach, Die RPG, Orbital Blues, and many more. Lone, welcome to the show.
Welcome.
Thank you. It's really nice to be here. I appreciate all the work that you guys do in the scene, and it's wonderful to talk to you about design and layout.
Thanks so much.
Hell yeah. We appreciate all the work you do in the scene. We love your work.
Yeah, I do think that, I'm trying to think if this is true. Orbital Blues is probably the first book that I saw that where I was like, ooh, this layout is really interesting. Like this, like that actually like got me from a layout perspective, and then I discovered a bunch more, but like that was probably the first game that really like sparked that interest in me, so thank you for that.
That's exciting, because that's probably one of my first forays into freelance graphic design in the tabletop scene, so that it was a great project to work on.
Well, you nailed it from the start.
So, Lone, we want to, you know, explore this whole world of layout design and graphic design in RPG specifically, get a sense of what makes for good or effective layout, and ultimately leave the audience with a better idea of how this under-sun aspect of game making works. To start, though, our sort of intro question we want to ask you is, what would you say is your core ethos when it comes to layout and design? How do you think about it in the broadest of terms when it comes to layout and design for RPGs?
That's a great question. I think the starting point is what not to put on the page, which might sound counterintuitive. When I was talking to you about doing this interview, I did a little bit of research because I know there's some quotes that are around that concept and idea, but I want to make sure that I accredited them correctly. Both Massimo Vignelli, an Italian designer, and Claude Debussy have something that is essentially what you don't design, or the space between the notes, is just as important as what you actually play in music or what you actually put on the page in design. And I think that concept is something that I try and put into anything that I touch as well. And the thought behind that is you want to be able to have your words on the page breathe, and you want to be able to understand them. So if you just have so much stuff on the page that you can't parse what's on it, especially once you are trying to bring something to the table to make it usable, it's difficult to do just that. It's difficult to use it. So that's one of the things that I try and keep in mind when I open up a new InDesign or Affinity document.
I know the other quote that I want to add to that combination of quotes is from Coco Chanel, which was always her thing of like, when you're leaving the house, you know, take one thing off of your ensemble, like simplify it, make it easier so the core idea makes more sense.
Right. I know there's a lot of RPG like critics that will sometimes bemoan white space in design. They'll look at something and say, oh, look, there's nothing on this page. You could have added another table there or something. And I think that is doing a disservice to legibility in the sense of how something on a page breathes, how it feels, and how, again, how useful it can be when you're actually trying to read it.
At time of release, we're in Orbital Blues month, which is one of the reasons we wanted to chat with you about, because you did the original book, Orbital Blues. And so kind of using that game as an example, when it comes to a game with like a very specific and highly stylized sort of layout, how do you apply this ethos you're talking about to a project like that?
part of the beautiful aspect of Orbital Blues is Josh Clark's art. And so one of the things that we would do is if there was going to be a beautiful art piece on a two-page spread or on just one of the pages, I would allow that piece to take up the entire page and then put as little as text as possible on it. And the reason for that is just to highlight the art piece itself. And that's not to add page bloat or anything, but the point behind it is to make it so that whatever is on the page is intentional in the sense that it makes sense. There's a marriage between the visuals and the words.
And so much of, especially, I think this is true for most role-playing games, but just thinking of Orbital Blues specifically, so much of what is conveyed in that book is the vibe and the feel of the world of the game that you're going to be playing. And when people think about Orbital Blues, like, I don't think a lot of people are thinking like, ooh, this 2d6 rollover system. They're not thinking necessarily of the mechanics. Rather, they're thinking, this is how Orbital Blues makes me feel. This is the vibe of the world I'm inhabiting. And that's what's coming through in this layout and through the art.
Thank you. I'm glad to hear that, because that is something that in talking with Zach as we were working on the project, that's something that we really wanted to come through the pages, is not just the mechanical aspect of it, but the vibe.
So, you know, we talked a little bit here about like how you approach it yourself when creating, but I think zooming out a bit, we always like to ask people who make different aspects of an RPG, by your measure, what would you define as the elements of quote unquote good layout versus maybe bad layout?
I think the simplest thing to boil it down to is paying attention to margins. And so if I can define that just for a moment, margins are the space typically in between where your content is on a page and the edge of a page. In something like Mothership, you're going to see really tight margins in order for them to utilize as much of that information for a very dense layout as possible. In something like Orbital Blues, we had very wide margins in order to make it feel a little bit more airy and vibe-based. But paying attention to that, as well as what's also called the gutter, which is the section that falls in basically in the spine area, the fold of the page, or the fold of the spread, rather. Paying attention to that is one of the first things that will tell me if this is something that was laid out by a professional or someone that is maybe opening Affinity for the first time. And I don't want to besmirch anyone who's opening Affinity for the first time. That is always a great thing. We have such a wonderful indie scene in the RPG space because people are doing that. But if you want to make something look professional, paying attention to that is one of the key things as far as a good and great layout.
It is always this is true of sports or like whatever. It's the fundamentals that'll kill you or like bring you to the next level. Those like very first building blocks are often the most obvious and the biggest indicators of success.
Yeah, absolutely. And then from there, just paying attention to, again, the going back to the quotes that we talked about at the opening, the space between all your content. If you have really tight what's called leading, which is the spacing between the lines of your characters and your paragraphs, it's going to be difficult to read and it's going to look, frankly, amateurish. If you have really tight leading, and if you have your art pieces encroaching upon your text, then it's also going to make it look, it's going to make it more difficult to read.
So two of the projects that I'm interested in drawing some parallels between two of the projects that you've worked on, because we've talked about Orbital Blues and how its layout is much more airy and like not quite sparse, but like has more of that white space. And then looking at Hull Breach, which is a collection of stuff for Mothership is like famously much more text dense. And like you were saying, has those smaller margins, they can fit in that additional material. Going back and forth between projects, what are the markers that you're looking for? Maybe like from the designer of a project or if like from the person who is hiring you, what are the markers that you're looking for to know how big, small those margins should be? How you're going to define the look of Hull Breach versus the look of Orbital Blues?
So when considering that as a designer approaching a project for a client, what I'm looking for when answering those questions is kind of going into client process in general. I always have a call with them in order to talk about what do we want the book to look like. Do we want it to be vibrant and vibe-based, or do we want it to be a little bit more dark and moody? Do we want it to have a ton of information on the page, or do we want it to breathe and feel more like a cookbook, as an example of something not in the TTRPG space? For Hull Breach, we actually spent, if I remember correctly, a good couple months talking about what we want the book to look like before we actually started doing any design and layout. We had mood boards of different typefaces and color schemes, and one of the designers put together an entire document on approved color palettes for the book. And that's how we determined how each section would be color coded. And we also would be able to make sure, since we were working with three different designers, that we didn't step on one another's toes and we wouldn't have a repeating color palette. So these are all conversations we're having in advance of actually sitting down to do the layout. And that same approach happened with Orbital Blues. It was a little bit shorter because I was working as a solo designer on that. But I sat down and did what I call a wireframe, which is very similar to the concept in web design. But basically, I laid out several pages and presented that to Soul Muppet and said, here's what the book could look like. Do we want to change anything about it? And in terms of going back to your question about Orbital Blues versus Mothership in terms of density, one's a little bit more hard sci-fi and one's a little bit more vibe sci-fi, right? So that determines which aesthetic we're going with at the same time. So that Tuesday Night Games is a very defined visual language. And so that was fun working in Hull Breach because we had a sandbox to play in that we already knew what we wanted it to look like. And Orbital Blues was fun for a different reason, because I was able to establish what that visual language would be. And now we have a whole wealth of first-party products that are able to borrow from that design language of the original core book.
When it comes to like this idea of like, you know, like an established visual language, creating a visual language, I want to maybe spin this into the idea of specifically this kind of design being part of a game, and how much you see layout RPG as part of a game design. Like when it comes to the text of a game and like the intended player experience and stuff, how much is the layout pulling from that and how much is the layout informing that or like part of the game's design?
Maybe we can dial this into talking about the difference between laying out a game manual versus a novel, right? In a novel where you have a lot of prose, it's very easy to just set up a wall of text and have beautiful introduction pages and chapter pages, but you're not really worried about hyphenations cutting off words and increasing reading time and understandability. Whereas in something that is a game manual, this needs to read more like an instruction booklet where you understand what's happening. So because of that, in my opinion, and this kind of changes from designer to designer, but hyphenation should be used very sparingly because you want to increase accuracy and speed of understanding when you're designing a game book versus just something with prose in it.
And hyphenation, in this case, you're specifically saying like hyphenation that splits a line, that like splits a word over two lines?
Yeah, exactly. Not hyphenation for like a dual cognate word or whatever it's called, but something that specifically breaks the line from one to the other, splitting up the word. That just increases how long it takes for someone to parse the text.
And especially in something like an RPG manual where, as you're saying, it's so much about getting information quickly, because most of the time, there's a certain amount of time when you're reading an RPG book leisurely and there's no pressure. But the vast majority of the time when you need an RPG book, it is very much under pressure because someone's asking you, hey, what's that rule, my guy? And you've got to be able to find it quick. And any little bit that slows you down is going to be a problem.
And I don't necessarily want to get into the bullets versus paragraphs debate, because there is something to be said for both. But whenever you're laying out a book, you need to do what makes sense for the section of the book you're in. Because there are a lot of books, like you look at the work by ZXU, which has a lot of beautiful prose in it, right? You're going to lay that out something different than you would in Hullbreach, which has a lot of very terse, syncopated information bites, right? Where it's just data that's being given to you as opposed to a scene that's being described to you.
And in terms of like kind of the layout and dissemination and distribution of information in a role-playing game book, for someone who is maybe like new to doing layout, or who's like trying to like level up their game, what have you found to be the most effective ways, the most effective tools in your toolbox to organize information? Whether that be like, I'm just kind of throwing stuff out, like, you know, indexes and headings and labels and, you know, side margin, you know, marginalia stuff. Is there anything that you point to as being like, this is particularly helpful that more people should be doing or looking at?
Yeah, that's a great question too. Understanding how to use headings is probably going to be one of the biggest ones. And I say this both when you're writing the manuscript in a Word doc or a Google doc or whatever it is, having a hierarchy of information is extremely important, because you need to be able to flip at a page. For example, I'm looking at Orbital Blues right now at the Gambit section, and we have a giant frame of text that says gambits, and then we have smaller headings for each individual gambit, and then the text to describe it is in a different smaller font underneath that. And the reason that we do that as designers is in order for you to parse that information logically. So I flip open to this page. I'm going to look at the H1 or the main heading first. And then my eye is going to naturally fall from that to the next smallest typeface or font. And from there, it's going to fall to the next smallest typeface. And so because of that, it's breaking up the information in a way that, again, aids in scannability. It aids in legibility.
I turned to that same Gambit page in Orbital Blues, and there's a lot of, I just kind of want to point out all of the different little things that are on this page in terms of like hierarchy of information. Because, so, you know, core things, there are things that are going to be used for people to find what they're looking for. Page numbers, there are, at the top, like in the corner, there's a section, like a section header that's at the top corner of every page that says gambits. There's the big ass gambit, you know, call out that says, hey, this is what this section's about. And then in each different gambit, there is the title, the H1, you know, big and bold. And then after that, there's one terse line that is like a description of what it is that's in italics. So now I know that's just flavor. I can skip over that if I need to. Then it's one or two lines about what this mechanic is, what this ability is, with keywords bolded, and like even like things like heart, which is a special thing, is bolded in red. So now reading through it, I know this is the one I'm looking for. I can skip this line because this is flavor. I don't necessarily need it right away. Here are the keywords or phrases or mechanics that are in this thing. There's a lot of different information that's getting distributed to me very, very quickly, which is incredibly helpful in that moment where someone asks you, hey, what does Ace Pilot do? And I can be like, okay, it's about savvy and mobility and stat checks. Okay, cool. It's about vehicles. Great. And I can figure it out pretty quick.
I don't have the number off the top of my head, but that was actually one thing that we spent a lot of time on, is talking about keywords and how to highlight them. So I thank you for bringing that up, because that is something that was kind of unique to Orbital Blues, because we do have a lot of different styles. We have just regular bold, we have bold in color, we have bold in underline. Sometimes we have an underline with a specific underline color. And that's all to aid ease of understanding as you're referencing it. Because there's a lot of information to parse, and sometimes there are a lot of different statistics in terms of game mechanics, there are a lot of stats in order to reference.
And it is great that once you learn the shorthand of a book, like here's what bold means, here's what bold in red means, here's what something in parentheticals means, now when I'm scanning, like I'm literally looking at the weapons traits page right now, or a section of playing the game. There are some things that are underlined in red, and I know that those are enemies. There are some things that are bolded, and I know that those are mechanics. And then I see red means attacks and heart. It is very helpful to just all of a sudden be able to be like, my eyes can scan and look vaguely for the thing I'm looking for and just get me closer to where I'm going in a really quick manner.
So you mentioned in there that like this organization of information, this idea of headings is something to like prepare at the manuscript level. And I kind of want to get into this relationship between like the writer and the layout designer and like how a writer, a game designer can most effectively build their game with layout in mind without, you know, the sort of like age old thing of like, don't write into layout. Like how can they be thinking about layout when they're in the writing stage? And how does that, how can that be setting the manuscript the best up for someone like you taking over on layout?
Looking at your headings and information hierarchy is going to be the first step. Going from there, thinking about how you want information called out would be especially helpful. There are some manuscripts that I've gotten where it's just a wall of text, and I don't know if information is supposed to be provided as a just laid out however I as the designer want, or is this supposed to be a call out? Is this supposed to be even a table? I've gotten manuscripts where I can't tell. So if you're preparing a manuscript, make each section on what you want it to be as clear as possible. And that's also going to make it easier for the designer, but it's also going to make it easier for you as the writer in order to not have the time extension of going back and forth on edits and conversations on like, what am I supposed to do with this page versus this page?
I know, Elliot, you and I, when I was doing layout for Project Echo and for Rom-Com Drama Bomb, that was like a conversation we had on pretty early. And it's something we came back to kind of throughout the layout process. But pretty early on, we knew that like, here's how our headers go. Here's what the bullet point structure looks like for the abilities in Rom-Com Drama Bomb.
Yeah, hierarchy of information was a big, I think, learning for both of us in making that book, Rom-Com Drama Bomb in particular, I think, because there was just like, there's a lot of sections and different headers and like, what is a subheader of this? Or is it its own new section at this point? So there was a lot of work we did on that, like in the manuscript.
There's also us trying to like standardize where things get highlighted. Specifically, like a lot of that book has like highlighting in pink because, you know, the whole book is pink. So that's kind of like our bold is highlighting in pink. And like, what does that mean? When someone sees that, it generally means, and I think this is true throughout, that is like, that is a mechanical thing you're doing. So like, you know, take a token would be in that bold pink, which is helpful as you're scanning through your character sheet. There's not a lot on a character sheet for Rom-Com Drama Bomb, but knowing that this is now the section of the thing I'm actually doing in terms of mechanics is helpful. It's the talk of the
table. GameFound is inviting you to participate in their second RPG party, a curated event designed to help indie TTRPG creators bring their projects to life through crowdfunding. Whether you're working on a zine, a 600-page collection of tomes, or something more esoteric, this is a unique opportunity to move forward with real support, visibility, and expert feedback. Applications will be reviewed by a panel of judges from GameFound and industry partners like Darrington Press, Modiphius Entertainment, Free League Publishing, and Magpie Games. 15 to 25 projects will be selected to receive workshops with industry experts, marketing support, one-on-one mentorship, and a community of fellow designers to grow together. Open call for submissions lasts from May 5th to 26th, and crowdfunding goes live this fall. Let this be the push you need to manifest your game in the physical realm. It's going to be challenging, there's going to be stress, and if you're able to put in the work, it's going to be so incredibly rewarding. Go to gamefound.com/blog for more information and to submit your project today.
This episode was brought to you by the World Builders Club, a project of Working Families Power, an organization building power for the multiracial working class. The World Builders Club is your go-to dispatch for breaking down the political, cultural, and emotional architecture behind your favorite universes. From romantasy novels and TTRPGs to blockbuster franchises and indie gems. This isn't just pop culture analysis. It's a love letter to the art of creating worlds and the power those worlds have to shape our own. I'm a huge fan of post-apocalyptic world building, so I recommend starting with their piece, We Can't Stop Watching the World End, which talks about properties like GLaDLands, Fallout, and Silo, and what they have to say about humanity and our ability to imagine a world after the apocalypse. But any piece on World Builders Club is going to be a great read for those of us who love to imagine better worlds. So join the club and build a better world with them by subscribing at bit.ly/WBC Many Sided or by searching World Builders Club on Substack.
My dearest listener, have I got a secret for you? Bitchertin is an improvised comedy podcast inspired by the stories of Jane Austen that tells the tale of a wealthy family's secrets, scandals, and shenanigans. Lady Bitcherton has unwed daughters, nosy neighbors, awful country cousins, and now a body to hide. Will the Bitchertons be able to keep their secrets off the pages of Lady Bigwither's gossip sheet? Or will her pen skewer their good name forever? Oh, Bits, what a predicament. Featuring the voices of Katie Maravich, Iffy Waddyway, Carolyn Page, Alex Songsharp, Brian Flaherty, and Cassie Wilson, plus a dance card filled with guest comedians of the very finest quality. But for us to help the seeds of rumor ripen into the juicy plum of scandal, we'll need your help. Bitcherton is heading to Kickstarter on June 13th. Go to bitcherton.com to pre-save the campaign and help us bring this story to life. Ta-ta for now.
The interesting thing about layout to me is that it is in conversation with every other piece of the project in unique ways. Like, you know, one of those that we talked about is the writer. I think the other one that you mentioned earlier with like Josh Clark and Orbital Blues is that like how you approach layout is going to be different based on the big suite of art you're given. And I'm curious sort of how that conversation goes for you in like whether you actually have a conversation or how what an artist prepares changes how you approach the layout. Like you could get, you know, 100 assets or you could get 5. Is there a preference or something better in those two, or how does that change it?
Working with artists has been different on each project that I've done. And it's something like you mentioned Die at the outset as well. That was wonderful because we had not only a wealth of original art for that project, but we had an entire library of art from the comic that we could pull from. Using that art made it easy for when we needed spot art so that we didn't have to say, hey, I need a piece approximately this size by this size. It's going to fit in here. But, you know, that is something nice to do when you are working with an artist after the fact. You've already laid out the book, and then you do need those small pieces to fit into a weird shape. One thing that I like to do in that case is I'll actually remake whatever grid that I happen to be using for the project, and then I'll export a template to give to the artist, and I'll say, can you just fit something in this specific spot? That usually makes it so that it's easy to work with the artist. They know exactly what I need in terms of bleed or whether or not to include bleed on the piece that they're doing. And doing something like Orbital Blues was nice because we did have a lot of art pieces that were already provided, and that also helped inform what I wanted to do with the layout. Because there are certain pages where I could take one of Josh's pieces and just put it over the spread and then inform what text I wanted to put on top of it. That isn't always going to work depending on the art pieces that you get, but so much of the pieces that Josh was contributing were so atmospheric and airy that it was easy to incorporate them into the layout.
similar to the question of like, what can writers do to prepare a good manuscript? Is there anything that artists can keep in mind that are illustrating for an RPG project that makes their pieces fit better into a book?
The two that immediately come to mind is, if at all possible, work in CMYK from the outset. And that goes into color theory a little bit. Just to briefly touch on that, CMYK is for print specifically. RGB is for digital applications. So anything that you'd see online, on Instagram, on Blue Sky, whatever, that's going to be RGB. But when you go to print, the art needs to be in CMYK. If you can get that from the artist at the outset in that color scheme, that makes going to print and finalizing, doing your pre-flight so much easier. And then paying attention to bleed as well. Sometimes when you get a full piece, it'll be exactly the size of your booklet. So if you're doing an 8.5 by 5.5 book, and you get an art piece that's 8.5 by 5.5, unfortunately, that's not going to be big enough to go to print. You need that extra, usually 1/8 inch of bleed in order to go just around the edges in order to have a print ready file.
Someone out there is probably thinking like, well, just put it on the page and then blow it up that extra 1/8 inch. What's going to happen every time is there's going to be a little part of the illustration around the edge that you like that's going to get cut off or put in a weird spot because of that. It never quite works as cleanly as you want.
There's the other thing to consider with that is, and I'm glad you brought up that point, when I haven't had this issue with any art assets yet, but when you're doing digital illustration in particular, you can do it at any DPI. The screen DPI is 72, which just means dot per inch. Print has to be 300 DPI. So if you're doing something that, even if you're a digital artist and you have something CMYK, if you blow it up in order to make it work with your bleed, that's going to reduce the DPI. And again, that's going to harm your ability to print a high quality product.
It's all the little things that'll really trip you up.
It's all the little things, right? One thing I want to highlight too, just as a general design note, is since we're kind of going on a tangent about DPI and print versus digital, those rules typically only apply when you're printing at book scale. Anything that's considered large format, like if you're doing a banner for a table at a trade show or a con, that you can typically do at about 150 DPI.
Well, so this leads right into this kind of like additional, this third conversation I'm thinking about in my mind, which is format is a huge part of layout design, obviously, like the way that you approach laying out, you know, a die size book versus an Orbital Blue size book versus a Hull Breach is going to change kind of everything. Not everything. The fundamentals will stay the same, but it will really change how you think about how this game is laid out. And when we were talking ahead of this conversation, you brought up trifold brochures specifically as an interesting layout design space. So I'm curious how you think about format and how it informs how you approach layout in these different kind of formats.
Yeah, so something like Hull Breach and Orbital Blues are going to be really close. They're in that 6x9 U.S. trade area. That's going to be your pretty common RPG size book. Those, the main thing that you need to factor in, aside from your standard margins that we talked about earlier, is just how much room that you have in the gutter of the book. Again, it's that area that falls in the middle of the spread. Anytime that you have a book that starts going over about 32 pages, you need to increase that gutter because the binding process is going to start cutting away at your content. So if you have a gutter that is filled to the brim with your text or even art pieces that span that, you're going to open it up and you're not going to be able to read your book because too much of your content has fallen into that middle section of the spread. So that's for those kinds of books, that's really the only consideration to keep in mind. For something that's closer to die size, which if I remember correctly is around US letter 8.5 by 11, that you want to be careful of not just paying attention to your typeface size. You don't want to try and scale up your typeface to match the size of the page in a book that big, because it's just going to look comically large by the time it goes to print. You want to stick around between the, I like to say 9.5, 10 point is a comfortable size for most typefaces, regardless of the size of the book that you're doing. Now, if we get into something like pamphlets, a lot of these rules kind of get thrown out of the window. The one that I particularly want to highlight, I had an opportunity to judge a trifold pamphlet jam on Itch a while ago, and I saw a lot of beautiful designs. And one of the most common recurring things that I noticed that could have a pamphlet go from being okay but to great and a little bit more usable would be paying attention to your margins. There were a lot that had content going all the way to the edge of the page, which made it difficult to read or parse, and it just didn't look as nice as some of the other ones. And these could have been first time entrance into the world of design, but even so, even if you're just opening up the free version of Affinity for the first time, if you give yourself roughly an eighth of an inch or 0.125 inches, that's going to give you not a lot of room to work with on the edge of the page, but it's going to give you enough so that it's going to look a little bit nicer. The other thing to keep in mind when you're doing trifold pamphlets is, if you're going to print, not every printer handles the format exactly the same. So just taking a 8.5 by 11 page and dividing it up into three isn't necessarily going to get you the correct sizes for it. Because once you start folding it, you have to take into consideration the size of the actual thickness of the paper, and that's going to affect your fold.
Remember, my second game I ever made is a brochure game called Something's Wrong with the Chickens, and I like laid it out. I think at the time I did it in Illustrator, which is just like shows how much I was just kind of fucking around then, and split the page up perfectly and then sent it to print. And like the front page, everything was like too far to the right once it got folded. Like the fold just made it so that it was notably askew and drove me crazy on the like first few of those I printed.
Right. And so that's one of the things, a lot of these entries that I saw were digital only. So for digital, that's not going to be a huge factor. But if you're going to print, what's the best way to solve that? One thing that you can do beforehand is download, if you know where you're going to try and have your copies printed, you can download a template or a request a template from the printer, and they should be able to provide that. And what that's going to do is that's going to tell you where to set your bleed, which is the space outside of your content that's going to get cut off. It's going to tell you what the recommended margins are in the safe area, which is any space that you want to have printed that is not going to be cut off. And it's also going to tell you, most importantly for a trifold pamphlet, where your fold lines are. And this is going to be a little bit different for every printer. So, for example, let's say you're working with Mixum. Theirs are a little bit offset, so it's not perfectly one-third, one-third, one-third. So if you throw that into InDesign or Affinity and set your rulers and guides, you're going to be able to have a pamphlet that prints correctly, and once it's folded, everything that you want to have aligned correctly on the page is going to show up exactly where you want it to be.
I think it's also worth saying that all of these, you know, setting up your template, like getting a template from your printer, setting up all of your presets in your UI, choosing your fonts, choosing your header, like that hierarchy of information, that is the thing you should do probably in most cases before you start jumping into the layout. This is the phase where you are sharpening your knives so that you can effectively cut this chicken that is this metaphor.
I was with you, and then I don't know, I lost it. I guess
really just setting the table and like setting the table and preparing as much as you can before you make that first cut is
oh you're sticking with it
helpful. I'm sticking with it. It's incredibly helpful because it is one of those things that seems like from the outside, this is going to be the part that seems a little bit boring, like talking about CMYK and talking about exactly the font size and the DPI. That if you do that at the end, if you wait until you're in the middle of something or at the end of something to learn about that and figure it out, it's going to be, I speak from experience, infinitely harder and take way more time than it needs to, because now you've got to go back and fix things. And by fixing them, things will break that you will then have to fix again. And it's a whole fucking process.
I think on our when we did Project Echo, it was Brian's first ever layout project. And so he was learning, I was learning. And I think we did 9 versions before it went to print. And like the last 5 of those was a lot of just like fixes that then created other problems. And thankfully, our friendship survived. And the book got printed. That was
also a thing that we got a little screwed by gutters in that first printing as well. Not crazy, but like looking at it now, I'm like, oh, I would have made the gutter a little bit bigger on that. And you don't really see that until you see the print, and then you realize how important those things are.
And that also brings up a good recommended process, if you can, is to do a test print in order to make sure that you can find any of those sorts of issues before you go across the final deadline of getting everything printed. And you don't want to order 2,500 copies and have them arrive in a pallet on your doorstep and then realize, I have this going into the gutter. Oh no, what did I do? And doing your prep beforehand reminded me of something that I wanted to touch on as well. I've seen a lot of designers that have been doing great work in the scene for years not know about this. So it kind of a call out for a very helpful tool. If you're working in either the Affinity or Adobe Suites, specifically in InDesign or Publisher, using what's called text or paragraph styles. These are essentially tools that will allow you to... So I use those ad nauseum for Orbital Blues, but what they are essentially tools where you can establish whatever your style is for... text, like the keywords we were talking about earlier, or entire paragraphs, and then you can assign a shortcut to those styles as well in the panel that pops up. And what that will do is whenever you hit the shortcut, it will automatically change whatever content you have highlighted in your text section to those settings. So that's going to save you so much time when you're doing layout on entire sections and you have, let's say, 10 different words that need to be highlighted in this very specific way for your keywords. You can just hit a shortcut and it'll automatically apply it to that. That has saved me so much time and been so helpful on not just saving time, but making something look cohesive across an entire larger book. For something like a pamphlet, kind of tying into what we were just talking about, that's not as needed because the content is so short. It's usually just either side of a US letter page. But for something like a longer book like Orbital Blues or Die, having text and paragraph styles are a huge time saver.
Anytime either in like text editing or layout or in audio editing that I make a new preset, it's always a good idea. It is always a boon to my existence. And it's the thing that when you start talking to other like audio editors or other layout designers, when you start talking about your presets and like your hacks to make things a little bit easier, that's the stuff that everyone gets giddy about. You get so fucking excited to find a little tiny shortcut that will save you that one little bit of annoyance that you have to do 100 times in a project.
So, Lone, as we sort of start to eye a close here, I want to bring this back to Orbital Blues Month. Orbital Blues Month is happening now, and you're working on a new book with the Soul Muppet folks. And I want you to talk about the new book, but I'm more curious about how you think your layout design has improved since that first Orbital Blues book and what those improvements will look like in the new one. And maybe what people can learn from that kind of like journey of improvement and how they might improve.
Yeah. And just to clarify, I'm doing my own project. I'm not.
Oh, you're doing your own project.
Yeah, I'm doing my own project. I'm not working on the one that Soul Muppet is putting out.
Copy that.
But I can still answer that as far as the difference in my design skills. I think textiles is one of them. I didn't start doing it until I think probably halfway through the original Orbital Blues core rule book. So just having that as Brian said, having that at the start of my process makes the entire rest of the book so much easier. Also just knowing where to source art. If you're doing something where you want to have a lot of public domain art or royalty-free art, that wasn't necessary for something like Orbital Blues, but for something like a smaller first-time creator, knowing where to get those kind of assets and resources has been a huge help in speeding up productivity and making a book look as cool as it possibly can. And yeah, I hope that answered your question.
And real quick, can you shout out what some of those resources are that you found that are particularly helpful?
Yeah, so there's something like the Smithsonian Art Gallery. I forget what it's called off the top of my head, but they have access to hundreds, if not thousands, of public domain art resources, as well as using royalty-free image sources. Something like Unsplash is great for if you want to have a probably something a little bit more modern, like a sci-fi book or a modern investigation book, something like that. Those are both great resources. And just taking time to look for asset packs and mock-up templates is probably actually one other thing that I would say I've improved upon personally as a designer since Orbital Blues originally. Knowing how to use a mock-up is going to help enhance whatever project you're working on is, from whether it be crowdfunding or just releasing it on your website. If you have, if you don't have the physical copy of it yet and you can't take photographs, knowing how to source and then refine a mock-up is going to be a huge help in making it look more professional.
And apologies for not realizing you were doing your own project for Orbital Blues Month, but could you tell us about the project that you've got coming for Orbital Blues Month?
Oh, yeah, sure. It's called Jupiter in E-flat minor, which is a jazz term, music in general, but I build this as a planet-hopping jazz-fueled adventure following a songstress that has disappeared, and you are picking up in her tracks to figure out why she disappeared, what happened, and also there's a little bit of corporate espionage and exploitation going into how the music industry can be at times not great for artists and musicians. And yeah, that's going to be running in April alongside Outlaws and Corporations, the project that Soul Muppet's doing. And yeah, that's the elevator pitch for it.
So Lone, my last question is sort of like a broad one about just your feelings as an artist that does layout design and graphic design. And one of the things that I have loved as a piece of advice is that artists need to consume other art and other media. And so I'm curious, when it comes to your practice of layout design, what are the things that you absorb and, you know, consume and read and enjoy that help inform and make you a better layout designer that you would recommend other people check out to improve?
That's a great question. And I agree with that sentiment, is consume as much as you possibly can. And also try and do it from outside of your space. So like if you're working in the TTRPG space, try and look at things outside of that to pull influence from. Because I guarantee that if there are designers in the RPG space that you look up to, that's what they're doing. They're looking for sources outside of the RPG space in order to gain inspiration from. To contradict that a little bit, if you're just starting out and you are wanting to lay out something on your own, two great designers that I would recommend in the RPG space are Sean McCoy and Johan Noor. Both can do very, very different styles, but Sean has a very dense and tightly packed style that Mothership has kind of become iconic for. And of course, there's so much that you can say about Merkborg, but in a good way. But I would also recommend looking at the work that Johan has done outside of that. Things like the Alien RPG. He just had a wonderful thread on the work he did for the Invincible RPG. And those are great sources of inspiration from within the scene. But I would also recommend looking at things outside of that. One of the books that I have that I love to use as a resource for inspiration is the Wipeout Design Manual by the Designers Republic. And that's a video game manual, but it basically goes into all of the design choices that were made for that video game. And it breaks it down beautifully. So that's one thing that I go to for my particular design style. But yeah, draw inspiration from wherever you can. Look at architecture, look at museum field guides and manuals. Look at art books is a great source that you could draw from, because they have usually very airy and very white space filled layouts that are great for letting the information, whatever information you need on that page, speak for itself before you move on to the next piece. And that's important in RPGs, because sometimes in order to drive a point home, you don't need paragraphs and paragraphs and paragraphs, just these walls of text that you sometimes see in more trad RPG books. Sometimes you might need a page that just says, here's the rule. And that makes it easier to find at the table. That makes it memorable. And it just looks nicer than walls of text.
That's a lot of great resources right there.
I've always also loved just going into, they're like, you know, crazy magazine shops here in New York City. And I'll just go into them and just flip through weird ass magazines from like Germany that I've never heard of. And like, you're going to see people doing weird stuff in those things. Just like, oh, this is interesting. What is this? What is this? Lone, thank you so much for coming to the table. We have one other question we like to ask everyone who comes on this show, and that is, what are you bringing to the table? And this is just our cute way of asking you for a recommendation of anything you'd like. It could be inside of tabletop, outside of tabletop, could be a game, a show, a resource, could tell people to take a walk and, you know, smell the roses. What would you like to bring to the table today?
Yeah, I think I'll reference the same book that I was talking about earlier, is the design manual for the Wipeout video game by the Designers Republic. Great, great resource, beautifully designed and laid out, great if you're looking for a kind of Y2K era inspiration. Awesome source to pull from.
Thank you so much, Lone, for coming to the table. Do you want to let people know where they can find you online if they're looking for you? And also remind people where they can find Jupiter in E-flat minor for Orbital Blues Month.
Yeah, thank you so much. I'm Lone Archivist everywhere. Brand yourself, people. Make sure it's easy to find you. Find me everywhere under Lone Archivist. I'm primarily on Blue Sky or my website /blog, lonearchivist.com. And check out Jupiter in E-flat minor for Orbital Blues Month.
And if you want more gaming content from us here at Many Sided Media, check out the Many Sided newsletter or become a member of the Many Sided Media Discord to talk about this episode and all of the episodes of Talk of the Table. Both of those are going to be linked in our show notes below. If you also want to help us out a little bit every month and also get bonus roundtables and additional discussions of Talk of the Table, you can become a member of the Many Sided Media Patreon. Just a few bucks a month, you can help us continue to do what we do here and also get a ton of extra cool stuff for your troubles. So please check it out. And as always, rate, review, and follow Talk of the Table wherever you get your podcasts. And that's what the table is talking about. Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.